This week's parsha of Korach, the main focus of the parsha is on the individual Korach who begins a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. At the bottom of the page we have, the Chumash tells us, Korach, son of Yitzhar, son of Kahat, son of Levi, separated himself with Datan and Aviram, sons of Eliav, and Own, son of Pelet, the offspring of Ruvain. They stood before Moshe with 250 men from the children of Israel, leaders of the assembly, those summoned for meeting, men of renown. They gathered together against Moshe and against Aaron and said to them, "It is too much for you, for the entire assembly. All of them are holy, and Hashem is among them. Why do you exalt yourselves over the congregation of Hashem? Umadua titnasu al kehal Hashem." So it's very interesting when reading the Chumash itself, it's very unclear what exactly is the argument of Korach. What exactly did he want? We see later on in the Chumash that there's some type of desire for Korach to become Aaron a Kohen, and there's a showdown with the 250 men where each one brings a ketoret, and only one ketoret, only one incense offering is accepted, and that being of Aaron, and everyone else is burned. And the Chumash continues how Datan Aviram and the rest of the people who argued were swallowed up in the ground and were completely destroyed. But the question obviously is, there must have been something that motivated Korach to rebel against Moshe and Aaron. What was the original cause? So here we find a very interesting medrash, and really two midrashim, and the interrelationship between these two midrashim will be our focus, Bezrat Hashem, for today. The Medrash says, and this is the end of source number one, Od bechazal huva berashi, uma ra'a Korach lachlok imoshe. Rashi brings down the Medrash. What was it that instigated Korach to argue with Moshe Rabbeinu? So Rashi tells us, Nidkane al nisiyuto shel Yitzhafan ben Uziel, sheminuhu Moshe nisiyah b'nei kahat al pi adibur. We know that Elitzafan, who was a younger cousin of Korach, became the Nasi, became the prince. And Korach was jealous. He said, "I'm an older cousin." Korach, we know, is one of the people who carried the Aron, a very, very holy, chashuv, and very brilliant individual, very holy individual. And he felt that he was appropriate for this position. Even though, as Rashi Beferish says, Al-Pi Adibur, Kadosh Baruch Hu, was decided that Elitzafan, for whatever reason, was more worthy of this. This is the underlying argument, that Korach felt slighted, and Korach felt that he deserved this position. So the cause of all this rebellion was the jealousy that Korach wasn't the Nasi, wasn't the prince. Then there's another medrash. This is the second paragraph in source one. The Korach shepikeach haya. Korach was a very smart individual. Ma ra'al l'shtutzeh. Why did he do something so foolish? Everyone knows. Only one person is going to win the showdown with the ketoret, with the incense. Why did he even offer himself into such a competition? So the Medrash says that his eyes deceived him. He saw shalshela gedula yotzeh mimenu. He saw greatness coming from him. He saw Shmuel HaNavi, who was going to emanate and descend from him, who was shakul k'moshe and Aaron, who was equal on some level to Moshe and Aaron. And he says, "I know I'm going to be saved in the schus of Shmuel. I'm ready to go into this competition." What he didn't see correctly is that it wasn't from him that this greatness was going to come, but rather from his sons, who at the last moment, right, Lam Nasech, Livnei Korach, Mizmor, right? We know a number of Kapitel Tehillim like this. Bnei Korach did tshuva at the last moment. They had like an island that was established for them that they didn't go into the abyss, and it's from them that Shmuel came. So the question is, what is the connection between these two midrashim about the desiring to be the Nasi as well as this vision which deceived him that greatness was going to come from him? In order to look at this relationship between these midrashim and to understand where Korach is at, I'd like to try to look at this as examining what jealousy is about. And once we have a handle on jealousy on some level, and how we can work on being able to take jealousy out of our lives, then we'll be able to look and understand this medrash again on two distinct levels. On the first level, let's try to understand the concept of jealousy. Let's take a look into and explore together some of the major items connected with jealousy. The first, as Rav Reis points out in Marosh Shirim in source number 3, it's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, Hakina v'ataiva v'akavod matzien ta'adam min ha'olam. Three things drive a person from this world: jealousy, honor, and desires. And we need to understand that kina, that jealousy, is something that can't be treated lightly. A person says, oh, so I'm jealous, what's the big deal? No. Kina, jealousy, is one of those aspects that has the ability to, just like honor and lust, has the ability just to get underneath one's skin and can drive a person into doing things that rationally they would never do. There's a very beautiful piece I'd like to learn together parts of in the Sefer B'yam Derech, starting in source number 4. And he notes here a yesod, a fundamental principle about jealousy, that when I learned it myself, I said, ah, this is like such an eye-opener. It's so obvious. Sometimes the most obvious is the most deep and most beautiful. And I think this is one of those. He notes in source 4, Ha'adam mekaneh b'ma sheshavelo. A person is jealous of something that is worth something to them. Adam sheyakar etzlo manmon mekanehu bebalei mamon. Someone for whom money, status, has importance. So then they're jealous of people who have money. Kevan shemamon tofes etzlo erech hashuv. A person who's showing for kavod. So then when they see people who are getting honor, they are jealous of them. We're only jealous of something that really holds importance for us, which I think is a gvaldic insight into our own selves, into our own lives. Right? A person could have a brand new car, or a person could have a brand new kitchen, or a person could have a brand new wardrobe, whatever it may be, something, you know, new and exciting. If a person is into, you know, the decor of their kitchen, into cars, into clothes, so that when they see this person, they may say, wow, I wish I redid my kitchen. I wish I had a new couch. I wish I had a new car. While another person will walk into this kitchen and say, very nice, but won't have that jealous feeling. What is that jealous feeling toward the car? Why? Because it has no erich, it has no value to them. So whatever we're jealous of, and I think to all extents, honestly, we're jealous people. We're jealous of many things in life. What we are jealous of is an indication and a reflection of what we hold is important for us. And if something doesn't even take up any space, it means that this doesn't have an erich, doesn't have a value for us. Now, we also know that there is one area of jealousy that could potentially be positive. We'll speak about jealousy being positive, but Rav Hashem, a little bit further on. But one area that Chazal speak about in source 5 is kinat sofrim tarbeh chokma. That the kinat of sofrim, which means the jealousy of wisdom, could make a person become even smarter. This is, obviously, when the kinat is b'muvan achiyuvi, dahainu, which means shemishtokek liyot chacham v'gadol b'tara avodat Hashem kiplori. You see someone whose avodas Hashem is tremendous. You see somebody who has a midah of emes, who does gemilas chesed, does kindness all day, and you say, wow, I wish I was like this person. This person's involved in sarchei tzibur, and you say, wow, I wish I was involved in sarchei tzibur. Not for the honor. I guess, I don't know how much honor a person sarchei tzibur gets, but that's a separate issue. But just because you feel like, wow, this person's making a difference, I want to make a difference. That type of kinah is a positive type of kinah, if it's going to motivate the person to say, I want to be a person who's going to be helping the community. I want to be a more learned person. I want to be a person of greater Yerushalayim. Ulam, ein eino tzara b'chavato shel oto ploni. Ad rabba, hino tov ayin hu alav, el shirotzeh lidamolo. You're not jealous of this person. You're jealous of what this person has achieved, and you too would like to achieve the same aspect. This is different, my friend, continuing in 6. Lumato mekaneh bebalei chokhma vekinato mavlito liot sarayim vechavero vechafetu libanot achorbano vevadai ein zu kinat sofrim shetarbeit lechokhma lehefech gam ma sheyesh lo loto mekaneh yilkach bimeno. But there's a different type of kinah. And that is that you're not jealous of their chokhma, of their wisdom, of their yirat shamayim. You're jealous of them. And if you're jealous of them and you're tsar ayin, you have a narrow eye, then you feel like just them being around me makes me feel uncomfortable. Because I see how great they are. I see where I'm at. And I say, boy, I don't like them around. And that type of jealousy will create such a schism that a person may do very bizarre things in order to bring this person down, in order to get this person out of your sight, in order to get this person to make sure that they are not as great as they think they are. And this, my friends, is really the difference between what do you do with kinah. You're jealous of a certain mita. You're jealous of a certain chachma. You can take it one way and it can be expansive. You can grow. You can model after them. You can become as great as them. You can strive for amazing things. Or you can take that same desire and move it at the intersection in a totally negative way, a very limited way of saying, how could they have this type of mita? And do whatever you can to get them out of your life. This is developed so beautifully in Rabbi Miller's Shabbat Shirim, where he says in Source 10, the distinction between the negative and positive manifestation of envy lies in the root of the emotion. The feeling of jealousy might stem from our perception of a commendable quality in another person, and this jealousy might go to strive to make this quality a part of our own character as well. Or, alternatively, we might be overcome by a bitter feeling at the very idea of another person being in any way greater than ourselves is intolerable. And he brings here that famous story of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who once saw two little children on the street debating which one of them was taller. So one of the boys settled the argument, continuing in 10, by pushing the other into the gutter and then quickly measuring himself while he had the advantage of greater apparent height. But Rabbi Yisrael explained to my friends, this is the Yesod. Dishonesty is a common weakness among children. However, this child's behavior is particularly despicable. Instead of lowering the other child into the gutter, he could have elevated himself onto a nearby stone. The child did not desire the actual quality of height. He merely wanted to make sure that no one else enjoyed any attribute that would eclipse his own. My friends, this is the challenge in our lives. When we're faced with this feeling of, I want to be as tall as another person, do we then raise ourselves up on a stone and say, I am going to go for greatness? I am going to raise myself up as best as I can? Or do we push the other person down and try to get them out of our lives? This distinction is so clearly drawn out in the one of the first stories in the beginning of Chumash of Cain and Hevel. Both of them display an element of envy, but each take the envy in a different direction, and as we will see, neither of them was the ultimate, but one was far better than the other. Rabbi Miller in source number 11 brings from the Maharal the famous question of how could Hevel have been killed if basically he was killed for doing a mitzvah? He brought a korban to Hashem. And we know there's a famous principle of a person who's involved in mitzvah has a shmira, has a protection from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what was it about Hevel that being involved in bringing a sacrifice for Hashem that he wasn't protected? So the Maharal answers the following. He says that the Chumash in describing Hevel's korban says, "Vehevel hevi gamhu," and Hevel also brought, which means that he saw that Cain brought a korban, and he said to himself, "Wow, that's a great idea. I also will bring. But his actions stem from the desire to imitate Cain and thus equate himself with his brother. An action is only classed as a genuine mitzvah if it's rooted in the depths of one's heart. Anything less than total sincerity is mere imitation. Without a firm foundation, a deed will be dissipated by the wind, leaving void, emptiness, and vanity. Hevel's very name, denoting vanity or futility, hints at this inherent characteristic. In this instance, there was no true mitzvah was performed, and therefore, he had no shmira, and Cain was able to kill Hevel. Yes, Hevel's korban was accepted, but the lashon of the acceptance our rabbis described was not the best. There was something inherently missing. Cain took this jealousy. He said, wow, his brother's doing something amazing. I too want to do this. So, in terms of the action, this was commendable that he took his jealousy and he raised himself up. Where the challenge was, where Hevel could have worked one step further, the model for us to work one step further is not to just say, wow, Cain did something wonderful, let me imitate him, but rather, let me try to understand the beauty of this mitzvah. Let me integrate it into myself. Let me incorporate it. Let me own this mitzvah and then bring it from my free will, from a place of me, not just a place of imitation. And this, my friend, sounds so subtle, but makes a great difference. Do I want to work on the midah of MS because my neighbor works on this midah and she's a nice person and I want to be like her, which is great and it's wonderful, it's a motivating factor? Or can I take this one step further and say, I want to work on this midah of MS because the midah is a beautiful midah and I want to have this midah? And that's taking kinnah and being able to really utilize it of tarbiyah chokhma, of being able to go to the fullest extent. The opposite side is clearly Cain. We know that when Cain's korban wasn't accepted, instead of indulging in resentment and becoming morose, Cain, the end of 13, should have been anxious to discover what was lacking in his offering and sought a remedy for his deficiency. Had his envy taken the positive form of kinat sofrim, he would have been glad that Hevel's offering had been accepted, because this afforded him an opportunity to learn how he might improve his own offering. But Cain didn't do that. Cain instead rather felt anger rather than self-correction, and ultimately we know when the opportunity presented itself, as the Pasuk tells us in 14, Vayomer Cain el Hevel achi vayhi beyotam basadeh vayakam Cain el Hevel achi vayahargehu. When they were in the field, when they were alone, Cain overcomes Hevel and kills him. And it's interesting, Rav Simcha Zissel in 15 Ziv, one of the great Musar personalities of the 20th century, once stated that the heart of everyone is a murderer. This sounds shocking. Yet although most of us were not set about physically murdering anyone, one often harbors thoughts of envy and hatred upon seeing another advance further than oneself. Resentment is magnified when another's progress appears to come at one's own expense. If not for our awareness of the grievous consequences of venting our anger or jealousy on another person, perhaps these secret emotions would be outwardly physically expressed, resulting in the devastation of civilization. Therefore, and this, my friends, is the key we'll develop with God's help, we must scrutinize our hearts honestly and unflinchingly with a view to discovering what our behavior might be should we ever find ourselves basadeh in the field, removed from the external factors that normally serve to restrain our hidden impulses. From when the evil inclination gains access to a bad trait hidden at the roots and sets into an emotion, there is no limit to the devastation that may ensue. This, my friends, is a challenge that we have to ask ourselves. Do we take the feelings of envy, elevate ourselves, be able to really make this kinyan and acquire this midah, Or do we have this feeling that the other person's whole being and presence, you know, my friend, my neighbor, she's too great of a tzaddikah. I just can't stand her. Like everything is with a smile and does all the chesed and everything and nothing is beyond her. Like, get her out of my life. And then you lashon hara begins and, you know, we're far more sophisticated than just going around killing somebody. But, you know, we start spreading rumors. I know we're beyond this. We should be beyond this. But we do something to make ourselves feel better by not raising ourselves up, by liking Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's story of the boys, by pushing the other down. My friends, with this we can begin to understand our first level of what the Medrash is about by Korach. Korach, we know, continuing on the next page in source number 17. Korach was niskane on the siyoto shalitzachat. He had this jealousy of wanting to be the nasi. But in the beginning, it was chafetz liyo makdoshim hakrovim l'sharet l'Hashem. And as Beyam Derech points out, that generally, when jealousy comes about, it comes about in the guise of a tzaddik. Now, obviously, I wouldn't have this terrible emotion called jealousy. No. I'm way beyond that. I'm jealous of something, you know, of spiritual and for your Hashemayim, and it starts. And that's our challenge, where it ends. But it starts in a very holy way. Korach said, Litzafon has a higher position. That's a position of greater closeness to Hashem. I want to have a position of greater closeness to Hashem. And then that starts the ball rolling. Well, who has the greatest position of closeness to Hashem? Aaron HaKohen. He is the one who brings these korbanos. I want to be like Aaron. I want to have a great position of closeness. And here's where Korach made the mistake. When Korach saw that greatness was coming from him, that just gave him the fuel to go about doing something which logically he knew made no sense. He knew there could be only one Kohen Gadol. He knew that Aaron HaKohen was chosen as a Kohen Gadol. But it was this jealousy that began the process, and jealousy is motzima ta'ata min olam. You lose clarity. And the slippery slope begins that he said, if I foresee, and the fact that he's able to foresee shows you what great level he's on. If I foresee that greatness is going to come from me, then I am confident that I am going to be successful in this endeavor. And this is what happens. As Beyam Derech notes, Shemidato haita shlav achar shlav, that the slope begins one step after another. Lachar shenichshal b'kina shel svara b'kavod, evade at erech atzmo v'lochash l'shum hafeit. Once he had this kina of svara of kavod, he lost any aspect of self, and he doesn't care what's going to happen to him. And slowly and surely, he then begins the slippery slope down, until not only does he take his life, but many other lives with him. Korach becomes for us the model, like Kayin, of what are the pitfalls of kina, of jealousy. But you know what, my friends? There's something very fascinating about jealousy, and this is true of the midos that Hashem has implanted within us. Jealousy is more or less something that's common. People feel jealous. Jealousy in of itself is not bad. It's as we have been discussing today, it's what you do with it. In fact, Marosh Surim, Rav Reitz points out in 22, he says, Afilu ha-masim ha-ksherim va-yisharim, many very worthwhile actions, gam heim lo hayu mitbatsim el malei kinat ish mireyehu. A lot of wonderful mitzvahs wouldn't happen in this world if it wasn't for kina. Masei mitzvot v'chesed sharabim lo hayu yotzim el apoel el malei shadam ro'ed ro'ehu mitpa'er bahem, v'alkenu mitkanepo v'alchez bitrachat. He notes that if you look at the world, and this is such an accurate statement that reflects so much of humankind's mitzvos and avodas Hashem, we are prompted by kina. You know, I know this, let's say, in a seminary situation. where I know in Dar Chavina a lot of the girls were not that far from Shari Tzedek, right, in Beit Vegan. So quite often girls will spend the night with a with particularly a sick child to relieve the mother, that the mother can go home. You know, Kanei Nahara has many other children at home, and at least, you know, there's somebody who's going to care for this child. So, you know, very often a kid will walk into class the next day like, ah, good morning, Mrs. Smalsing. You look at this kid and you say, like, where have you been last night? And she says, you know, I got, you know, whatever amount of sleep sitting near this child, how many times they get up. And other kids hear this and they say, wow, that's an incredible chesed. You mean you relieve a mother in order for the mother to go back home and that you can, you know, be with this child? That's incredible. I want to do this. And then that kid says, you know what, give me information. You know, I also want to do this type of chesed. And that has a ripple effect where it's a positive type of jealousy, of desire, of I too want to do this. You ever wonder why they make these appeals in shuls, you know, that take so long? You know, $500, so $1,000, and auctioning things off. Why? Because it raises stucca. You know, a person says, that guy gave $5,000? I could give $5,000. You know, I don't want to be less than him. That feeling of jealousy, that feeling of I don't want to be outdone by somebody, is an impetus, albeit it has to be clearly, you know, for the higher level done, l'shem shamayim, not just out of jealousy. But again, Hevel's korban was accepted. There is an aspect that eventually we tell shelo lishma will be baal lishma, of giving that stucca, and ultimately, hopefully, the person will understand the value of stucca in its own right. So when we're talking about jealousy, we have to understand that when that midah attacks us, we have to be able to get a grip, and instead of just saying, let me move it away from me, right? Kind of a type of a kavod, mosim et adam mina olam, saying no. Yes, that is the potential of jealousy, and it's very dangerous. It's like playing with fire, and hence I call the sheer juggling jealousy. It's very difficult. But if we're able to take that spark and say, let me be motivated and elevate myself, not put the other person down, matov l'manayim. Likewise, he notes that this is also true. Continuing right above the arrow in 23. This is not only true of chesed, it's not only true of mitzvot, this is true in general in our society. So often people are motivated to develop themselves, to push themselves, because they say, hey, look what that fellow accomplished, I could accomplish that. And that prompts the person to move further. But what is the litmus test? So the way that Rav Reis describes it, I think it's a very powerful model for us to use. Let's learn together the arrow, asterisk in 24. Harishon, the proper attitude toward jealousy, says, Sho'elet atzmo tadir, is constantly asking themselves, Ma Hashem Elokecha Doresh Mimo, what does Hashem want from me? U'be'etein l'kach, and based on this, Huoseh upoel, he acts and he does. Megamat panav limsochein b'nei kono, one's whole focus on this level is upward to do the will of Hashem. V'la'alot b'chol hafshar eramato haruchanit, and this whole person's life and focus is how can I become a better person. So I see this person's doing this chesed, I say, wow, that's a wonderful chesed. I want to do this chesed. I want to do this chesed because I want to grow on my votus Hashem. And I feel based on who and what I am, and based on where I am at in my votus Hashem, this makes sense to be the next step. However, we have Lumato Yeshromi. We have another type of person, Shemabato Mufne Klape Abrios, who instead of looking upward is looking to the side. And all they're trying to do is to have a good position, to look good among the people around them. Such a person is not interested in how they're growing and developing, but in how they're doing in terms of those around them. And my friends, this type of jealousy is very dangerous. for one of what we spoke about, because this type of jealousy will perhaps lead to speaking Lashon Hara, to doing things to undercut the other person, to raise yourself up by pushing them down. And the other pitfall in this type of jealousy is if you just compare yourselves to other, rather than comparing yourself to yourself, legabe, where you can be in your avodas Hashem. So if the people around you have hit a certain type of complacency and apathy, so then you also be complacent and apathetic. Yet your jealousy will only be to the extent that they have achieved something. When they stop achieving, there's going to be no impetus within you to continue to achieve and continue to grow. And that is why it is very dangerous. And this is something we need to train kids from a very young age. It's very dangerous to always compare yourself based on others around you. You know, you have this so often. Perhaps some of you are familiar with this as parents, where a kid will come home and say to the mother, Ima, Mommy, I got a 96 on the test. I got a 78 on the test. It's irrelevant what the kid got on the test. And what invariably does the mother say? And what did so-and-so get on the test? What we're doing is we're training the kid from moment go. Compare yourself to others. And then the jealousy begins. Instead of saying to the child, how did you do on the last test? Did you feel you did better on this test? To train the child, to train ourselves, to compare ourselves to ourselves, because that, my friends, is really the best barometer. And here, the B'yam Derech offers us a very, very interesting insight that I'll tell you quite honestly, I struggled with and had to read quite a number of times till I was able to, on some level, process it. He says in the second paragraph in source number 26, he says, Korach, let's summarize in the first paragraph first. Korach was being told by Moshe Rabbeinu, is it not enough that you have been chosen to be a member of the tribe of Levi, that you have an important position, you're carrying, as a rabbi says, you're carrying the oral. Is that not enough? You want more? Ubikashtem gam kehuna? And on this, the B'yam Derech notes, second paragraph 26, let's learn together. Dehainu Amir Moshe Rabbeinu Korach. Does this Moshe Rabbeinu say to Korach, Yesh lecha lismoach b'chelkecha. You need to be happy, to rejoice in your chelek, in your portion. Domnam yesh lishof legalut. For sure, a person always has to have ambition and desire and aspiration for greatness. Omnam bipoa mashi sakta yesh lecha lirot oto b'harbe. Yes, you always have to aspire and grow, but there's also a place to appreciate and to recognize where we have come from, what we have achieved, and to feel a svias ratzo, and to feel a satisfaction in that. Because if a person is always going to look higher and higher and never feel good about where they've been, it's going to lead a person to yeyush, to despair. And that's like a very interesting balance, where a person has to step back and say, I've accomplished a lot. I've done a lot. Yes, there's more for me to go. And I need to work on that and move forward. But at the same time, I have to be makir mechomo, I have to be samech mechoko, which we know are part of the 48 Kinyane Torah, of what the acquisitions of the Torah is about, and be happy in our place. And that is what Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching Korach. Korach, you started with this kina. If this kina, if this jealousy was good jealousy, it would say, you would say to yourself, I can become the best Korach around. And you would work on developing yourself, appreciating who you are, and becoming the best you can be. Instead, Korach, you decided to try to be someone else who isn't you. And that's where the pitfalls are. That if you try to reach levels that are beyond you, you're just setting yourself up potentially for failure. That very famous Hasidic, memra of Reb Zusha saying, I'm worried in Shemayim why they won't Well, they're going to ask me, why weren't you Reb Zusha? I'm not going to worry why. They're not going to ask me, like, I wasn't like Avraham Avinu, or I wasn't like, you know, whoever. Because I wasn't. That wasn't who I am. But how come I can't be me? And part of being me is to be satisfied with where you're at, and then moving further. And I think, my friends, just to take this one step further, before now working into the practical realm, I think this is very important in terms of Chinuch Banim too. You know, so often I call this, particularly in Eretz Yisrael, but it's true everywhere, park conversation. You know, two women are sitting in the park, and their kids are playing on the slides and the sandbox. You're getting the picture here. But it could very easily be two women online in the store, or two women wherever, you know, on their treadmills of place. And one woman says, you know, my Shloimi is, you know, reading already, you know, knows 100 Mishnayos by heart. And the woman's saying, well, my Yitzi only knows 2 Mishnayos by heart, you know. My Shloimi is in the Beis Medrash till 10 o'clock at night, or my Yitzi comes home at 8 o'clock. And what happens? They start comparing. And then Yitzi's mother comes home and says to Yitzi, what a bum you are. You know, I spoke to Shlomi's mother. You know, Shlomi knows 100 Mishnayos by heart. You only know 2 Mishnayos. I mean, what's wrong with you? And again, it breeds this aspect of jealousy, which is not helpful. Because maybe Yitzi can only learn 4 Mishnayos. And maybe Shlomi can learn 2,000 Mishnayos. Let Shlomi deal with Shlomi and Yitzi deal with Yitzi, because that's where they are at. And when these comparisons happen, we're just setting our kids up for potential failure. You can encourage, you can reward, you can do whatever you want, but you don't bring Shlomi into the picture, and you don't bring Yitzi into the picture. And the same thing, my friends, holds by Rav Volpe in Yanvas Riyadah Chinuch, says this as well. He says, if a mother goes into her friend's house and sees how polite the children are, and how they're setting the table, clearing up, and making their beds, face, I don't know, whatever they're doing, you know, like an army camp. And she goes home and says to her kids, you know, I went to Mrs. Gold's house, and her kids are doing X, Y, and Z. It's about time you do X, Y, and Z. That's not chinuch. That's jealousy. That's not proper chinuch for your children. If that's what you want your children to do, so then you have to look at your children, look at your life, and develop them into that routine. But to do it just because Mrs. Cohn's children are doing it, that's not chinuch. That's coming from jealousy. And that's what we have to be careful about. Are we like Hevel just imitating? Or we really believe that this is the correct thing to do? Is it because of social standing? I want my Yitzi to be like my Shlomi, like her Shlomi? Or do I really believe this is best for my child? These are the questions that we need to ask ourselves about ourselves and about our children as well. Now, how do we work on having a grasp of our feelings? How do we work on making sure that we're able to take these feelings of jealousy and direct them in the correct path? So I'd like to suggest as an approach, one of two approaches. The first being a very interesting insight, or number of approaches. The first being of Rabbi Pliskin in his introduction to the Sefer Gateways to Self-Knowledge, which is a very, very beautiful Sefer. And he says, and will say it in many words, that knowing oneself in 30b is a foundation for fulfilling the Torah and its commandments. If you do not know yourself, you'll not know what you have to watch out for. Being aware of your virtues will encourage you to elevate yourself even more. Being aware of your faults will keep you on guard not to give in to your negative tendencies. And a person's philosophy of life and the rationale behind his action is based on his character traits. Continuing in D. The more aware you are of your traits, the more you'll be able to recognize which aspects of your ideology and attitudes are a product of your shortcomings, weaknesses, and faults, and which are the ones that you need to work on. And he says very clearly, if you don't have a handle on who you are, then you can very probably take a mita to work on that's not appropriate for you to work on. So just to give an example, he says, let's say you go to a shir, and the person talks about mesinos, doing things patiently and slowly. Person comes home and says, wow, that's a wonderful mita for me to work on. I'm going to think before I speak. I'm going to think before I do anything, and I'm just going to weigh everything. If you as a person are a person who procrastinates, that is the worst mita for you to work on, because you will accomplish nothing in your life. If you're a person who's a rash person, that's a great thing to work on. So to randomly say, oh, I think this is a great thing to work on, is very nice, but it's not helpful if it doesn't fit in with who and what you are and where you need to go. It's not going to take you anywhere. That's why it's imperative to know what are our strengths, what are our weaknesses, and then if I'm a person who procrastinates, I hear about patience, I say, no, that is not where I need to go. I need to go and listening to Shiurim about taking initiative and moving forward, and that's where I need to develop myself. But he notes in 32E, one of the major difficulties in obtaining self-knowledge is that in our imaginations, based on Alishura Bobi, we have an illusory picture of ourselves. The picture we have is without any shortcomings, and our positive qualities are exaggerated 1,000 times more. Moreover, it is possible that in our imagination, positive points are actually that we actually have are missing from our view of ourselves, and in their place are other virtues that in reality we are missing. The problem is that we relate to ourselves from the perspective of our imaginary picture. This picture is what is directing our actions and our words. If you sincerely want to know yourself, you'll have to be aware of what is illusory and what is reality. And as he notes in 33a, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to say, a person can live with himself for 70 years and still not know himself. And that is so true. A person who is serious about working on self-improvement must know himself first. We have to take stock of our deeds, and we have to know what are our strengths and what are our weaknesses. And then we know that when we have a feeling coming our way, we're able to have a sense of what we're doing with this feeling, who we are, how does this feeling resonate with us. But if we're so confused about ourselves, so then when these different types of feelings come our way, we don't know what to do with them, and we don't have a handle on what's the best way to elevate them and not, God forbid, to be one of those who motzim et ha'adam min ha'olam, that's going to drive us into a frenzy of envy and do things that are not logical, like Korach, because he saw the end result. Now, there's a great maisa that Rabbi Pliskin brings in this sefer at this point of a young avrich, a young, you know, newly married fellow comes over to a Rebbe and says, Rebbe, I have a problem. I'm an arrogant fellow. I need to work on my arrogance. So Rebbe says, okay, I want you to sit in my office. I'll be with you in a couple of minutes. Fellow comes in, the next online, and says, Rebbe, I have to marry off my child. I have no money. Can you please help me? Rebbe says, hold on a minute. Turns to this young fellow and says, do you have any money to lend him? He says, I'm so sorry, Rebbe, I'm broke. I have no money. I can't help him. Okay. So Rebbe gives him another way to get money. But he leaves. Next guy comes in and has a very complicated question about business dealings. So Rebbe says, okay, to the young fellow, tell him, what would you suggest? He says, I'm sorry, I don't have any business experience. I don't know what to tell him. So Rebbe answers him. Third person comes in, and it's a very complicated Talmudic case. Rebbe says, hold on a second, turns to this fellow and says, okay, how would you respond? He says, I'm sorry, I don't have real background in such intricacies of Talmud, of Gemara, I can't help him. Rebbe answers the question. The guy leaves. The Rebbe turns to this fellow and says, I don't understand what your problem is. You have nothing to be arrogant about. You have no money. You have no business sense. And you have no learning sense. There's no problem here. But that's so much of us, that we think we're something, and we're not. We're missing the boat. Step number one has to be da et atmecha, know yourself. And he notes in 34, you can't leave this up to somebody else. It really has to come from you. Continuing at 34, some people's second paragraph become very confused about knowing themselves. Their confusion goes something like this. I don't know who I am, what I want, what is the real me. I have an identity crisis, so for the problem is the question itself. A person is the sum total of all his thoughts and actions. Since this includes a very large area and a multitude of categories, it's impossible to sum up the true identity of a person in one or two sentences. Rather, we have to break down one's behavior, thoughts, words, goals, motivation. We have to know what comes out of our mouth, what we're thinking about, minor actions, minor movements, major actions, what happens at every passing moment. Ask yourself in 35, what do I worry about? What is your major ambition in life? When you have an emotional reaction, even if it's a very slight one, to what you hear, ask yourself what this tells you about yourself. It's about, and my friends, it's a lifetime. It's not going to happen overnight. It's difficult, but it's an investment for a lifetime. We have to begin the process of at least once a day asking myself, what am I feeling right now? Why am I feeling this way? Why did I react this way? At least to be able to get to know ourselves. And he notes in 36, again based on Rav Wolpe, there are many people who try to escape from moments of solitude as if they were fleeing from a fire. In such moments, they suddenly stand face to face with a stranger, that is themselves, and they have no wish to recognize him for what he really is. They therefore try to rush to get away from him. They do not realize how far away they are from knowing themselves. A person with intelligence will seek out these type of moments, because it's these moments that we are basadeh. We're alone in the field. We're alone with ourselves. These are the moments that we really can get a handle on what am I really feeling? Who am I really? Not who am I because my response is based on community pressure. It's based on peer pressure. It's based on everyone else's response. But who am I? And you know, my friends, we see this so often with kids as well. You know, you can have with little kids all these different lollipops. And you say to the kid, what color lollipop do you want? And they say, I don't know. And then they wait. Well, everyone's taking a green lollipop. I want a green lollipop. Does a kid really like a green lollipop? Okay, it's a simplistic example. But it's very true as we grow older. So the lollipops change. But unfortunately, we don't change. If everyone around me is, then I will. Is that a sense of who you are? Or is that a sense of how you mimic and how you're just a reflection of those around you? Rav Pinkus has a gewaldic piece in a totally different area in this week's parsha, where he speaks about on the arrow in 38, on the pasuk, Vayikra b'shem Hashem in parsha Kitisa, Rashi brings down, Ukra b'shma zeh, that you will call in God's name. But the Ibn Ezra says, Vayikra is about Hashem, not we call, but Hashem calls. Hinei Hashem hu akareh. Hashem is the one who calls, and he kivyachol calls in his name. And says Rav Yerucham on this in 39, Shachar shelamanu ech yikra moshe, shomnam davar ze yitachei b'metziur, benim navin zor benim lav, hinei kach sarich hadam li naheg. We have to emulate kivyachol Kadosh Baruch Hu, that just like Hashem speaks to himself about himself, we too, kena ladam tamid ledaber im atzmo o latzmo. We need to talk to ourselves about ourselves. And the Mashkiach ends by saying, double underline in 39, Vadvarim amukim, this is very deep, ma'od, v'nara'im ve'emet, and there's a tremendous amount of awesome truth in this. And that's in fact how he explained the Chazal at the end of 41, where Chazal say in the next world, no tzaddik will see his friend. Everyone will be living in their own place. So he explains in a very beautiful type, it means that every person in the next world will really only have achieved something based on what they've done from themselves, not what they've done based on peer pressure, social pressure, etc. What's a real barometer of who we are is what we've accomplished in our own lives because of ourselves. And this, I believe, my friends, gets us to the heart of Kena. Why are we jealous of others? Part of it is because we don't feel comfortable in ourselves and we always want to be like everybody else. But if we would have a sense of who we are and what we're about, so then the positive kenna would be there. I can be better. I can be greater. Yes. But that negative kenna, that feeling of, and the negative feelings associated with jealousy wouldn't be there. Oh, look what she's doing. Oh, look what they're doing. Oh, look at their kids. I'm not worried about them because I'm comfortable with who I am. Which leads us to the very beautiful idea in the Darkei Moshe in source number 43. On the pasuk, who Aaron and Moshe asked, or Moshe finds things that's out. Very famous question, who Aaron and Moshe, Rashi tells us, we learn that they're schooling, that there's some places Moshe is in front of Aaron, some places Aaron's mentioned before Moshe, to say they're equal. Ask for Moshe Feinstein, how could you say they're equal? Lo kam Navi ke Moshe, oh, there's no one, a Navi like Moshe, obviously Moshe Rabbeinu is greater. So one of the answers Moshe gives is that just like Moshe Rabbeinu developed himself to his fullest potential, so too in that way Aaron was shuckled, was equal to him, that Aaron developed his potential to the fullest of his capabilities. However, Moshe brings down here that famous Chazal. And right in the middle of 43 of Basra, Daf Yudam and Beis, the Yosef Bereid Rabbi Yeshua, Yosef, the son of Rabbi Yeshua, got sick. And he went into this faint, and he saw a vision of the next world. And his father said, what did you see? He said, Olam Hafuch Ra'iti. I saw an upside-down world. Those great people down here are on the bottom upstairs, and those people who are on the bottom down here are Elyonim, are high upstairs. So his father's answer is no. Olam Barur Ra'ita. You saw a perfectly clear world. Because the barometer of what Elyonim and Tachtonim, upper and lower, is not the human barometer. As he says here, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu Eino Ba B'Trunya, Hashem does not demand, he doesn't have a complaint. Mikol Echad Rak Kefi Kocho, asking you to be somebody else, just asking you to be you. V'lachein Eilu Shekocham Katam B'Kishrenoteihem V'Kadomeh, Aval Asu Kefi Kocham Kimu Shlichutam Ba'Olam Hazeh, V'lachein Heim L'Mala. Therefore, those who are limited in capabilities but are able to do it to their fullest extent, they are really the ones above. Well, someone who's blessed with tremendous amount of capabilities and does not fulfill their potential, they are really on the bottom. My friends, this is the Yesod. The only one that we need to compare ourselves to is ourselves. When I recognize that it doesn't matter what this person's doing, it doesn't matter what this person is adding to their house, it doesn't matter what this person has. What this person has, and this is chelik of our emuna, what this person has is what they need for their avodas Hashem. They need the children, they need the wealth, they need the whatever it is. That's what they need. These are the kelim, the tools that they need. I'm not jealous of them because that's what they need to serve Hashem. If I am comfortable in my own skin, I say, I know that I need different things to serve Hashem. And therefore, I'm just going to focus on being the best I can be in what I have. I can dive in for more things, but if Hashem doesn't give it to me, it means that this is not what I need. And just like I'm not jealous of another person's eyeglass prescription because they wouldn't be able to see out of mine and I wouldn't be able to see out of theirs, likewise, I'm not jealous of what they have because the only barometer I need when I get up to Shemayim is they're going to say, how come you weren't or were you like the best you could have been? Were you the best parent you could have been? Not comparing yourself to your next-door neighbor who's Miss Perfect. Not comparing yourself to the other next-door neighbor who's Miss Abusive. But you, who you are, have you done the best of your ability? And that's what counts. It doesn't really count the end result. All our job is to be in process and to be able to accomplish the best that we can accomplish. And my friends, this is the yesod of what the Medrash is about. Let's just learn one more idea and come back to our original Medrash. A beautiful piece that Traga brings in 45. We know that the Medrash tells us that Korach came with the 250 men and he put on them a talit shekula tchela, a garment that was completely blue. That strand that's supposed to remind you of the sea, that reminds you of the heavens, reminds you of the Kisei Kavod. And ask Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, does this talit, this garment, which is kula tchela, completely this blue, does it need tzitzit, one strand of tzitzit? Moshe Rabbeinu said yes, and they started laughing and scoffing him. Come on, if the whole garment is blue, why do you need one strand? So listen carefully what the Datrag explains on this medrash. This is the Yisod. Hata'ura Rishana Shal Korach 45 Haita Shesavar Shemitzvot Hashem Noadu Bishvil Lasik Ezematara V'Tachli. Korach believes that doing mitzvot is about coming to a goal, a tachlis, an end. V'lua Matara V'To'elet Ritzuya Ruchanit V'zeh Lo Nachon. It's not about the end, even if it's a spiritual end. Mitzvot Hashem Lo Noadu Kedei Lasik Ezatachli. The mitzvot is not to reach the end goal. It's not for a purpose. HaMitzvot Heim HaMatara L'Kishatzvam. The mitzvot, the purpose is in its own right. Dahainu Etzem Kiyun Sono Yisparo, to do God's will. And therefore, even if you would get to the end goal in a different way, in our case, you will remember the Kisei HaKavod by having the entire garment blue. It's irrelevant. Lo nitkayem b'zeh inyan ha-mitzvah, because that's not what Hashem wants. He wants you to be involved in the process of the mitzvah itself, of the one strand. This was Korach's problem. When the Medrash said that Korach's eyes deceived him, he saw greatness coming from him, that was his problem. Korach is looking at the end goal. He sees a Shmuel HaNavi. He sees greatness. He sees a talus which is full of tchelas. But that's not what life is about. Life is not about looking at the end goal of where I, who I am, who that person is, what that person has. Life is about the process to reach these things. It's a mitzvah itself. It's to realize that even if I've not accomplished an iota near where my neighbors have accomplished, if I am in process and I am doing the best I can, I am a success because I have a different level than they have. So therefore, instead of feeling envious that Shlomi has 100 Mishnayos learned, if my Yitzi is learning those two Mishnayos with his entire being to a certain extent, if Shlomi could learn more, Yitzi is far greater than Shlomi. I'm not looking at the end result of 2 versus 100. I'm not looking at the Talajit Kula Trelet. I'm not looking at Shmuel HaNavi who's going to come down the road. That's your eyes deceiving you. That's where jealousy can lead you in a very negative way. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to Korach. Korach, be happy with who you are. Be the best Korach. You're not a Litzafon. You're not the Nasi. You're not Aaron HaKohen. You're not the Kohen Gadol. You're Korach. Korach, I want you to recognize, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, the greatness that you have. And if you involve yourself in the process of being the best Korach possible, so then you will live a life of tremendous happiness. Your she'ifa, your passion and desire to try to raise yourself up to where you need to be in your closeness to Hashem. And ultimately, my friends, as our final idea, spoke about that one of the midos that the Torah is acquired by is hamakir mekomo, is to know your place. There's a certain value in life, a certain menuchas hanefesh, to know exactly who you are, exactly where you're at in life, and how you need to develop, and what you need to do in order to be the best you can be, without the apathy, without the complacency, moving forward. And we also need to keep in the back of our minds, as the Tiferet Shmuel points out in 42, hamakir mekomo is also to recognize that a person's ultimate place is not this world, that our ultimate place is the next world, and that if I get so caught up in this world, I've lost perspective. I've lost being able to see with clarity. Hamakir Makomo means they know ultimately that this place is just a stepping stone to a much greater world. So I'm not going to get caught up in the lust and the envy and the kavod in this world, and then in that way deviate from what my real avoda is. I'm going to be able to be makir makomo, know my place, and know that this world is so transient. I'd like to close, and then we'll summarize with that beautiful maisa. Two people who are fighting about an adjoining land, and this one saying the land belongs to me, and this one saying the land belongs to me. And they go to a rav, and they say, who does the land really belong to? The rav says, let's go out into the field. I want to see the land. So go out into the field, and they come to that section which is being, you know, argued about. And this one's saying the land belongs to me, and this one's arguing the land belongs to me. The rough goes down to the ground. He puts his ear to the ground, and they're looking at him as if he's totally nuts. And he says, the rough says, and you know what the ground says? The ground says, and ultimately, both of you will belong to me. And that's what we need to keep in mind. We need to have a perspective in this world. And therefore, we begin with Korach on the first level, began with jealousy. Jealousy of the Nesios, of being the prince. This was a slippery slope that led him ultimately down to feeling that he was going to win the showdown because his eyes deceived him. Know that jealousy has two paths. It can raise you up or can push the other person down. There can be a Korach who wants Aaron out of the picture, a Kain who wants Hevel out of the picture. Our challenge is to be a Hevel, but one step even better, that we imitate, but we make it our kinyan, that this is what I want to do. Not just because my neighbor's a tzaddikas, but I believe that this mita, this mitzvah, is important in my avodas Hashem. That's our challenge, to take the jealousy, which is a common feeling, and be able to raise it up. How do we do this? It's about that atzvacha. Know yourself. Know what you're about. Know what your feelings are about. How can you call yourself arrogant when there's nothing in you, when you know nothing? Know where you're at. Know what you need to work on. Hamakir mekomo. When a person knows themselves and they know their only barometer of measuring themselves is against themselves. And in such a case, it's not about the end result. It's not about remembering the Kisei HaKavod. It's not about the color blue. It's about the fringe. It's about the process. And that's where Korach's eyes deceived him, that he looked at the end result and didn't look at the process. And our job is not to look at what our neighbors have accomplished, what Shlomi, how many Mishnayos he knows by heart. It's to make sure that we are involved in our process and recognize that our process is tailor-made for us and that we're here in this world for such a short time. I bench everybody that we should be matzliach and being able to take the jealousy of the positive kind that it will push us further in our own avodas Hashem, and will be able not to feel jealousy of the negative sort of comparing myself to others, which has such a destructive value, but to have that simcha sachayim of a makir mekomo, of to know your place and to know what you need in order to develop yourself to be the best self you can be.